listening to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Here's your host, Dr. Mike Chubb.
Welcome, friends, to CMDA Matters, where we explore the issues that matter most to Christian healthcare professionals. Whether you're in healthcare, married or otherwise related to a healthcare professional, or you're simply interested in how God is working through Christ followers in patient care and beyond, we're glad you're here. So many of you gave generously during our fiscal year-end campaign, and I just wanted to express our gratitude once again. Your prayers and your support and your partnership are helping to fuel ministry at a national level, equipping healthcare professionals to live out their faith with boldness and with compassion. The impact, friends, is real, and it's being felt by our teams, by our leaders, and the many lives being touched through CMDA's mission. We're going to be sharing a full update in a couple of weeks, but for now, we're so grateful for you. This week, we're bringing you another plenary address from our recent national convention in St. Louis. If you've never experienced a CMDA gathering in person, I hope that this will give you a glimpse of the energy and inspiration and the deep encouragement that happens when believers in healthcare come together. Today's episode features Erin Hawley. She is Senior Counsel and Vice President at Alliance Defending Freedom, and she is author of the book Living Beloved, a reflective book that invites moms to see their identity as God's beloved through the eyes of their children. Erin has played a central role in two of the most significant legal battles for life and conscience freedom in recent history. She served as lead counsel in Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine versus FDA and as a key contributor in the historic Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization case. In her message, you're going to hear her offering a compelling behind-the-scenes look at the fall of Roe v. Wade, CMDA's role in defending women and unborn lives from the abortion pill, and the growing legal threats that are facing pregnancy care centers, as well as pro-life medical professionals all across our nation. With clarity, conviction, and deep compassion, Erin challenges us all to stand boldly in a post-Dobbs world, where the battle for life, truth, and conscience is far from over, friends. So let's listen in.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Frost Clark, and for everyone for having me today. I was mentioning backstage how pleased I am to be able to speak to you, and more importantly, how excited I am that such an organization like CMDA exists and that it is flourishing. My colleagues and I talk to medical students routinely. I wouldn't say every day, but maybe every week. And as you know, medical students are facing a lot in law schools. As the video we just showed, there's not a lot of accolades going to pro-life viewpoints in medical schools today. We're exploring what we can do about that from the legal side, but more important than that is the mentorship and collegiality shared by this group, so thank you. So today I wanted to pick up a bit on your sort of phrase for the convention. It comes, of course, from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who says that our goal as humans, and yours especially as medical professionals, is not simply to bandage the wounds of victims beneath the wheels of injustice, but to drive a spoke into it. Dobbs was a spoke into the wheel of injustice of abortion. Now, Dobbs was rightly decided, but it took about 50 years for the Supreme Court to get there. It killed about 6 million unborn children. There was no real defense of it. John Hart Ely, a famous professor at Yale and Harvard, said that Roe wasn't constitutional law at all and hardly gave any sense of an obligation to even try to be. So the question is, why did Roe continue for so very long? Well, the reality is Roe highlights an impoverished view of womanhood that our culture has by and large accepted. Its 7 male justices told the world that motherhood, quote, forced upon women a bleak and distressing future. I beg to differ. And yet, no one thought that Roe versus Wade would be overruled. I remember just the month before oral argument, I was debating at Columbia Law School with a professor, and I was making all the points, saying how Roe had no basis in the Constitution. The Constitution is utterly silent on the right to abortion. It can be found nowhere within its text. And finally, the professor, who had worked actually for the Reagan administration, sort of threw up his hands and said, "I agree with you. I actually wrote a brief for the Reagan administration urging the Supreme Court to overrule Roe versus Wade." But it didn't happen then, and it will never happen. Folks, let me tell you, Dobbs was nothing short of miraculous. The Lord orchestrated so many things, and I wanted to pull the curtain back just on a few things that I thought you might find encouraging. The story really begins with a single mother who was a nurse in Mississippi. Her name is Becky Curry. Becky Curry worked on the OBGYN floor and remembers delivering a 15-week-old baby. She talks about holding that child as it struggled to live. Fast forward, and Becky Curry becomes Senator Curry for the state of Mississippi and sponsors a bill that protects life at 15 weeks of age. Mississippi elects, it passes the law, it's immediately challenged and struck down under the law of the land, Roe versus Wade, and Mississippi files a cert petition that sits and sits and sits and sits some more at the Supreme Court. This is highly unusual. Typically, petitions are denied the first decision date after conference, but this one sat and sat. And in that time period, Justice Ginsburg was replaced by Justice Amy Coney Barrett. Another thing, Mississippi elected a staunchly pro-life attorney general, and that attorney general hired an amazing team, including Scott Stewart, an accomplished appellate advocate. Lynn Fitch and Scott Stewart bucked the conventional wisdom and asked the Supreme Court to overrule Roe versus Wade, as Scott tells it, because that was the right thing to do. Now, with the hindsight of 2020, that might seem like the obvious thing to do. Of course, Mississippi should ask the Supreme Court to overrule Roe. Of course, Mississippi should do that because it is the right thing to do. But you might be surprised to know that a lot of really amazing constitutional lawyers, a lot of really faithful believers and pro-life advocates thought that Mississippi should sort of take it easy, thought that they should sort of play the game and ask the court simply to modify Roe, to uphold Mississippi's law, but don't push the court too far. Don't ask them to overrule Roe. But Mississippi said no. Mississippi said Roe's wrong. We're going to ask the Supreme Court to overrule Roe. And I'll never forget the day of oral argument when Justice Kavanaugh said over and over again, "The Constitution is silent on abortion. Why should federal judges get to make the law for the entire United States?" A very good question. I think it was on that day that many of us had real hope that the Supreme Court might actually overrule Roe. And of course it did. And many of you in this room had so much to play in that. Again, Roe was never supposed to be overruled. It took the prayers, it took the marches for life. And one of the things that's always sort of struck me about the Roe and Dobbs dichotomy is that Roe lasted 49 years. We know, of course, that the 50th year in Old Testament times is the year of Jubilee. It's a sort of super Sabbath. It's a time where there's no planting, no harvesting, a time of rest and renewal, a year that is holy to the Lord. And now we're in the years after Dobbs, and the years after a Jubilee are significant because they represent a new start, a fresh beginning, a time to reflect on the past and to look forward to the future. And I wanted to do a little bit of both of those things with you today. Now, there's no doubt we're facing current battles, cultural battles, battles for life, battles for the truth that men are created men and women are created women. And in the wake of Dobbs, we saw pro-abortion forces, we saw the media come out, we saw millions and millions of dollars dumped into state ballot initiatives and campaigns across the country. They say that they just want to get back to Roe versus Wade, but that's not true. Many of these ballot initiatives go much further. They talk about reproductive care, which could include a right to things like dangerous drugs and surgeries for minors. They talk about something called strict scrutiny, which would jeopardize even modest protections for women, like informed consent and waiting periods. A recent article published, I think last week, celebrated that there may have been more abortions today than before Dobbs. Why one would want to celebrate more abortions is beyond me. Gone are the days when pro-abortion advocates say that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. The article goes on to allege that 6 abortion drug purveyors in Shield states mail abortion drugs to more than 10,000 patients in pro-life states each month. The medical care these tens of thousands of women get? Hardly any. I wanted to say thank you and to point out that in the space of protecting women from the harms of abortion drugs, CMDA has been at the tip of the spear. CMDA brought a challenge in the case that Dr. Frost Clark referred to, Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine versus the FDA. As many of you know, when the FDA first approved the abortion drugs, it did so under subpart H, and it did so by calling pregnancy a, quote, life-threatening disease or illness. One of my favorite moments in the AHM litigation was when Judge Ho, a Fifth Circuit judge, the representative from Danco, the abortion drug manufacturer, was at the lectern, and Judge Ho remarked, you know, we just celebrated Mother's Day. Did we celebrate a disease? She, of course, was forced to admit, and no, Your Honor, we didn't celebrate a disease. And of course, pregnancy is not a disease. It's a natural process that takes place for many women. But when the FDA approved mifepristone, it did so under this process for especially high-risk drugs. And it required at least some modest safeguards. You had to have 3 doctor's visits. The age gestational limit was 49 days. And you had an in-person visit to check for things like ectopic pregnancies, to accurately assess gestational age and the like, and you also had a follow-up visit to check for infection, sepsis, or hemorrhaging. Fast forward, in 2016, almost all of those protections were stripped away. And then in 2021, under the guise of COVID, the Biden administration took away that last remaining in-person visit. Again, the only opportunity for a doctor to check for something like an ectopic pregnancy, which can be life-threatening, or to accurately assess gestational age. And it did so based on studies that the FDA conceded were, quote, not adequate. The FDA's own current label for abortion drugs says that 1 in 25 women who take the drugs end up in the emergency room. And the studies that the FDA used to strip away that doctor's visit showed that number would go up without the visit. The FDA's removal of protections on the abortion drug means that women or someone else take the Louisiana case where a mother ordered the drugs for her daughter and forced them to take her. The girl ended up in the hospital, and Louisiana Attorney General is suing the doctor in New York who provided those drugs. But women can go online, mothers, significant others can go online and get the abortion drug shipped to a home or dorm room for a girl or woman to take all alone. That's not real health care. So I always think it's especially powerful to hear from women who are brave enough to talk about that experience and to highlight what it can be like for women and, of course, for the unborn child. But I'm here to say that though the Supreme Court didn't go our way in CMDA, I want to encourage you that the case mattered. CMDA, stand for truth, mattered. And it did so in 2 concrete ways. First, CMDA's lawsuit challenging the removal of safeguards resulted in the largest Supreme Court win for medical conscience rights in history. The Supreme Court, as you'll recall, found that doctors like Dr. Frost Clark, other CMD doctors, and other pro-life doctors didn't have standing to raise these claims. But the reason it could do so is because the Biden Department of Justice switched its tune. In another CMDA case, a case challenging the Emergency Medical Treatment Act, the Biden Department of Justice, in that case, CMDA won, but the Biden Department of Justice had told the federal courts that emergency room doctors have zero conscience rights. Now, before the Supreme Court, the Biden Justice Department changed its tune. I'm quoting here from the opinion, "The government concedes that federal conscience laws definitively protect doctors from being required to perform abortions or to provide other treatment that violates their consciences, religious beliefs, or moral convictions. The court goes on. As the government notes, federal conscience protections encompass the doctor's beliefs rather than particular procedures, meaning that medical professionals cannot be required to treat in any way that would violate the doctor's consciences, even in emergency situations." That's a big win for medical conscience rights. And second, that case isn't over. We saw another article come out last week. It was a study from EPPC, and that study noted that it examined insurance data, and that insurance data linked women who had obtained abortions with complications from abortion harm. Of course, that's really hard to do based on data that's available to the CDC, and so this was a really good idea to look at this private insurance data. I think it also included Medicare and Medicaid data as well. And what that data showed is not that 1 in 25 women end up in the emergency room, but that 1 in 10 women, 10.9% of women who took the abortion drugs suffered a serious adverse event as defined by the FDA. That is a shocking number of women being harmed by the FDA. At a minimum, this study shows that the FDA should reconsider its decision to eliminate that last remaining in-person doctor's visit. Interestingly, the EPP study shows, for example, that 3,062 women were treated for ectopic pregnancy after taking the abortion drugs. Ectopic pregnancy, of course, is contraindicated because it can be life-threatening and mask the abortion drug can mask the indications of a ruptured ectopic pregnancy. And yet, the Biden administration took that in-person visit away. I'm hopeful that this data, combined with the evidence that states suffer harm from these dangerous drugs, from their women, they go to hospitals and are treated at state expense. The states really, so to back up, in the lawsuit isn't over. States intervened in the lawsuit. There are three of them that are continuing to litigate in federal district court in Texas. And the states have a couple of different arguments, one being an economic harm, that they suffer harm when women on Medicaid or Medicare suffer abortion drug consequences, and two, that they have a sovereign injury. Their laws protect life, but these out-of-state doctors ship them into the state, disallowing them from protecting life. So the case isn't over, but as the harms of abortion drug comes to light, harms that CMDA has highlighted, I'm hopeful the Supreme Court will take on the merits of the APA challenge that CMDA brought. So one other thing I wanted to highlight in our time here together is another group, in addition to CMDA, that is at the tip of the spear in this battle to protect unborn life, and that, of course, is pregnancy care centers. These centers provide free medical care. Many of you probably volunteer or donate to them. They provide baby supplies, parenting classes, job training classes. They're sort of an unlikely entity to be labeled public enemy number one. But that's precisely what the blue states have labeled pregnancy care centers. After the leak of the Dobbs decision, dozens upon dozens of pro-life pregnancy care centers were firebombed, vandalized, and threatened, all because they couldn't condone abortion. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. 15 blue state attorney generals signed a letter pledging to use their offices to go after pregnancy care centers. And they've made good on their word. In September of 2023, California's Attorney General sued Heartbeat International, a network of pregnancy care centers, as well as 5 pregnancy centers in California. New York's Attorney General sued 11 pregnancy centers and Heartbeat International in New York. Washington State Attorney General opened an unjustified investigation against Abria Clinic. One of my favorites to sort of in the crazy world we're living in is an investigation brought by the Attorney General of New Jersey. New Jersey sued First Choices, initiated an investigation of First Choices Pregnancy Care Center demanding constitutionally protected donor information. Alliance Defending Freedom represents First Choice. We filed in federal court and said, no, you've decided, the Supreme Court has decided that donor information is protected. The district court said, you don't get to bring those claims in federal court. You have to go to state court first. That doesn't happen for any other civil rights plaintiffs. So we currently have a petition pending before the United States Supreme Court, asking the court to reverse that determination and say that pro-life advocates, just as anyone else, has an opportunity to present their claim to federal courts. To go on about the prevailing winds that pregnancy care centers are facing, Vermont law explicitly targets pro-life pregnancy centers. It threatens thousands of dollars of fines if they advertise in a way the state deems, quote, misleading. So what's all this fuss about? Again, pregnancy care centers provide free medical care. They provide parenting classes. They're there for women facing unexpected pregnancies when no one else is. Well, I suspect the reason that pro-abortion forces are so up in arms about pregnancy care centers is in part because they're telling women about abortion pill reversal. We know that many women come to regret their abortions. Some do so immediately after. And that destroys the lie that abortion is all about women's choice. The tragic fact is that most women don't obtain an abortion from a place of empowerment. One survey performed by the Human Coalition shows that the vast majority of women who'd had an abortion said they would have chosen to parent if their circumstances would have been different. Pregnancy care centers are trying to change those circumstances. In another survey, 2/3 of women were ambivalent about their abortions, and nearly a quarter said their abortions were either unwanted or coerced. These statistics are heartbreaking because they suggest that many women have an abortion because they believe there's no other option. APR gives moms who regret that decision a second chance. Chemical abortion, of course, involves two drugs. The first is mifepristone. It's what's known as a progesterone antagonist. So it basically blocks the progesterone receptors in a woman's uterus, starving the child. And a second drug, misoprostol, induces contractions in labor. So there's a window between the first and second abortion drugs where progesterone, which is naturally occurring, has been given to women to help with pregnancies for 50 years, can be given. And that sort of competes with the mifepristone. And studies have shown, of course, it's not always effective, but studies have shown the effective rate is something between 64 and 68%. And according to statistics, about 5,000 babies have been saved. APR destroys the pro-abortion narrative. And I wanted to share just a few words of clients from pregnancy care centers that ADF represents. This is from Miranda. Hearing about abortion pill reversal from New Hope and abortionpillreversal.com truly gave me hope. I didn't want to continue the abortion, but I didn't know what to do. And from Victoria, APR gave me a second chance to be a mom. If I hadn't heard about abortion pill reversal, I firmly believe my baby girl would not be alive today. Among the worst of the states silencing and censoring pregnancy care centers as well as medical professionals is Colorado. In Colorado, it's against the law not only to tell women about abortion pill reversal, but also for medical professionals to administer progesterone for this purpose. You know, again, thank you for your courage in being pro-life doctors and medical professionals. And the bottom line is that medical professionals should be able to do everything they can to save lives. And if a woman takes the abortion drug, the first one, and wants to change her mind, she should have access to potentially life-saving care. Pro-life pregnancy centers should be able to serve women, men, and children without government harassment. I noticed, too, we've got an ADF colleague in the audience. I think he's a new CMDA board member, Kevin Terrio. And I'm pleased to say that in this fight against overreach by state attorneys generals and other overreaching officials. We've secured at least one preliminary injunction against the state of New York, against its lawsuits and its investigations of pregnancy care centers, and we hope to secure more. Because again, medical professionals, pregnancy care centers need to be able to support women and to do so consistent with their consciences. And Kevin, thank you for your work on those cases. So. The last thing I wanted to mention today is sort of a bright spot, I think, in sort of the culture wars, if we want to call them that, or in other terms, just plain common sense. For those of us who believe that God creates each child in his very image, male and female, and that biology not only matters, but is a special gift from the Lord, I think the tides are changing. We saw an executive order from President Trump on his first day in office that made clear that Title IX and other federal statutes should be interpreted consistently with biological sex. This is really important in so many areas of the law, many of them affecting medical professionals. Of course, Title IX and a proper interpretation of sex to mean biological sex in Title IX means that women and girls in schools are entitled to private places that are just composed of women. Men can't go in women's bathrooms. Many schools provide accommodations and non-gendered restrooms, but women's restrooms under the Trump administration's version of Title IX are reserved for women based on biological sex. The same thing is true of sports teams. But how is this good news in particular for medical professionals? Well, many of you likely know that the Affordable Care Act sort of piggybacks on Title IX in something called Section 1557. Section 1557 is a non-discrimination principle, and it provides that for any doctor or clinic who accepts federal funds, everything from CHIP to Medicare to Medicaid, that those healthcare providers are ineligible for federal funds unless they agree to discriminate on the basis of race, national origin, sex, age, or disability. Seems pretty straightforward, pretty easy to comply with, until the Biden administration interpreted sex to include gender identity. This had devastating effects for medical professionals as well as young children. Under this redefinition of sex, this means healthcare providers would be forced to act against their sound medical judgment and perform harmful, potentially sterilizing procedures on children and adults who want them, even if the procedures violate state law. So to get more specific, under the Biden administration's Section 1557 rule, doctors who use medical treatment to treat premature puberty could be forced to prescribe puberty blockers for gender dysphoria. And if doctors perform mastectomies for breast cancer, they would be forced to provide them for gender transitions. Needless to say, the federal government has no right to tell doctors that they must perform these procedures, much less in violation of their conscience. Now, the tricky thing, this is sort of in the legal weeds, but the tricky thing about the Biden administration's Section 1557 rule is it is a rule. So that means that, unfortunately, the president's executive order doesn't necessarily just wipe it from the books. But there are a number, probably four or five lawsuits challenging this rule. It has resulted in a preliminary injunction in several jurisdictions. And our hope is that the Trump administration will move quickly, consistently with the executive order to redo the rule and clarify that sex means biological sex. And again, this is sort of in the weeds, but I'm so encouraged in this area. For those of you that have any interest in the law, I would encourage you to listen to the Supreme Court's oral argument in a case called Scrimeti. Scrimeti also includes this question about sex, biological sex, or gender dysphoria. And the specific question in that case was whether Tennessee could protect its minors from these sorts of drugs and procedures. Tennessee had looked at the evidence. It said, we think these procedures are too risky for minors. We are going to ban them until you reach adulthood. The Biden administration didn't like that and actually sued Tennessee in federal court. But the argument at the Supreme Court was so, so good. The justices not only pointed out that the Biden administration was 100% wrong on the law, it does not violate equal protection for the state to treat men and women differently based on medical procedures that only a man could have or only a woman could have. The Supreme Court seemed really clear on that. The other thing the Supreme Court took note of was that there wasn't scientific evidence to back up the Biden administration's claim. The Biden administration had claimed that these sorts of procedures were necessary for the flourishing of minors. And Justice Alito, in particular, sort of took the Solicitor General onto the carpet and said, wait a minute, what about all of this evidence? What about the CAS report? What about the studies from the countries that pioneered these treatments that are now saying that any potential benefits, that the benefits aren't proven. So number one, the best evidence shows that the benefits aren't proven, but it also shows that the risks far outweigh any potential benefits. So I'm really hopeful we won't know how that case comes out, probably until late June, but it seems likely that the Supreme Court will determine that states can protect minors from these sorts of gender procedures. There's another case that a colleague of mine argued, Medina, at the Supreme Court, and this one is also important because it can allow states, if ADF prevails, to defund Planned Parenthood. In the case, the government of South Carolina decided that it wanted to fund women's clinics, women's providers that provided holistic health care, not simply abortion drugs. One thing that many people, you guys probably do, you're more informed than the average person, but many folks don't realize that Planned Parenthood is also one of the main purveyors of gender hormones and cross-sex hormones. And so a win in Medina, which would allow states to disqualify Planned Parenthood, would impact not only those Planned Parenthood's ability to provide abortion drugs, but also cross-sex hormones. So I just have a minute or two left, and wanted to circle back to where we began. And with Roe gone, there's no question that we are confronted with the reality that law is not enough. But it can never be enough. Paul chastised the Galatians and said, "You foolish Galatians, why are you relying on the law instead of the power of the Spirit?" What we need is a culture of life. We bear the challenging but oh so important mission of changing hearts and minds, of arguing for the reality that every child is individually created, unique, and priceless, not just when they're unborn, not just when they're toddlers, but also when there's a teenage girl struggling because her peers think that it's better to be a boy. So I wanted to end with a personal story. Dr. Frost Clark had mentioned that I was able to serve, privileged to serve as co-counsel to Mississippi in the Dobbs case. And Kevin went down with us, and I had just joined ADF and had a young daughter at the time. And we were all supposed to go down there. I was like, I can't go. I've got an infant daughter. And my boss said, just bring her along. We'll pay a babysitter, and it'll be great. It wasn't quite great. So the morning of the meeting, we were supposed to be diving into the weeds. And the Supreme Court hadn't had an abortion case for a really long time. So we're talking about, how these justices who haven't written a lot on abortion, what are the arguments that are going to be the most persuasive of them? So I'm trying to prepare for that meeting. My babysitter got delayed. She also coaches. So was running late. Her plane was delayed. And Abby really needed a nap. So I literally ran her up and down the halls of the hotel room in her stroller. And she finally conked out. And so I put one of the light linen blankets over her and just stuffed her in the corner of the conference room and, stay. And it didn't work. And it wasn't long. We were just, getting into the details of legal strategy. And Abigail woke up screaming absolutely bloody murder. And she's absolutely adorable. She's also really, really loud. So I was sort of embarrassed as this new member of the ADF team. But I think it brought it home to me, certainly, and I think to all of our team, that she was just such a powerful example of what it was we were fighting for then and are fighting for today. She's beautiful, like red curly hair, but the reality is she's not any more beautiful, any more loved by God, any more deserving of the most basic of rights, the right to life, than any other child. So I thank you. Thank you all for your pro-life work.
Erin Hawley's message is a reminder that law alone is just not enough. We need a culture that values life and that honors truth and protects the right of healthcare professionals to practice according to conscience and conscience freedom. In a post-Dobbs world, chemical abortion is on the rise. And as we recently explored in our episode with EPPC experts Ryan T. Anderson and Jamie Brian Hall, the abortion pill is far more dangerous and traumatic to women than what drug companies are willing to report. At CMDA, we're committed to protecting life, to defending conscience freedom, and to equipping healthcare professionals to live out their faith. We're grateful for leaders like Aaron and for members like you who are willing to speak boldly, to act courageously, and to serve God faithfully in today's most challenging cultural landscape. If today's episode encouraged you, please consider sharing it with your colleagues and your family and your friends. Be sure to follow the podcast on social media to stay connected, encouraged, and up to date. To learn more about CMDA's ongoing advocacy work and how you can get involved personally, just visit cmda.org today. If you've never experienced a CMDA convention or retreat, we'd love for you to make this fall the time that you join us. There are two incredible opportunities coming up, one for our Midwesterners and one for our Northeasterners. For those in the Midwest, don't miss the Midwest Fall Conference. It's a long-standing favorite in our CMDA community, and it's now celebrating its 35th year. It's happening September 26th through the 28th at the beautiful Maranatha Retreat Center on the shores of Lake Michigan. This weekend offers thoughtful teaching and meaningful fellowship, as well as worship and rest. We'll have speakers like Dr. Far Curlin, Dr. Stephen Coe, and a special panel that features Dr. Carl Truman. You can earn up to 6 CME credits, and there's a full children's program for kids who are 12 and under, making it a great experience for individuals or your whole family. Whether you come for the sessions or for the quiet moments on the beach, we sure hope that you'll leave refreshed. And then for those who are in the Northeast, we invite you to join us for the Northeast Regional Retreat. That's happening October 24th through the 26th this fall at Sandy Cove Ministries in Northeast Maryland. This year's theme is going to be Faith Embodied, led by Dr. Stephen Coe, who wrote a book with that name, a pediatrician and a preventive medicine physician at Massachusetts General Brigham Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts, who's been our guest actually several times on this podcast. It's a meaningful time to explore both physical and spiritual health alongside other Christian healthcare professionals and students like you. Continuing education credits are available, and there's a $25 early bird discount through August 1st. If you're a first-time attendee, you can also find an additional discount code on the event page. If you'd like to learn more about both of these events and register, you can go to cmda.org/events. As I mentioned last week, for the month of July, we're excited to feature an amazing lineup of plenary speakers from our recent national convention. If you attended and want to revisit these impactful messages, well, now's your chance. And if you missed NatCon, consider this your front row seat to hear a few of the compelling voices who inspired us this spring. Next week, we'll hear from Dr. Eric McLaughlin. He's a family medicine missionary physician, medical school professor for Hope Africa University in Burundi, and author of Promises in the Dark, Walking with Those in Need Without Losing Heart. And I'm here to tell you that Eric had the longest standing ovation at the national convention I've ever heard, so you don't want to miss his talk. I want to thank you for listening to CMDA Matters, where our mission remains the same, bringing the hope and the healing of Jesus Christ to the world through committed Christ followers in healthcare. That's what matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. May you recognize this week, friends, that the Lord, He is with you, and that He is for you to do His good work. Thanks for listening today, and we'll see you next time, Lord willing, on CMDA Matters.
Thanks for listening to CMDA Matters. If you would like to suggest a future guest or share a comment with us, please email cmdamatters@cmda.org. And if you like the podcast, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share it on your favorite social media platform. This podcast has been a production of Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.